Electric vehicles and solar power have gone mainstream.
Hey, thanks for listening to Local Energy Rules. If you've made it this far, you're obviously a fan, and we could use your help for just 2 minutes. Wherever you found our podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, or somewhere else, help other folks find us too by rating our podcast. You should also check out ILSR's other podcasts, like Building Local Power or Community Broadband Bits. Thanks so much for listening.
And all of these vehicles will be self-driving or semi-autonomous by 2030. All this in the next 13 years, or maybe sooner. Seba, an entrepreneur and instructor at Stanford University, spoke with John Farrell, who leads the Energy Democracy Initiative here at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, about the transformation already underway and why the shift to a renewables-centric, electrified future could come even sooner than he originally predicted.
Disruptions happen from the outside. So usually incumbents either don't see the disruption coming or they don't see it coming quickly. They deny it, so it's too late for them to do anything about it.
This is Local Energy Rules, a podcast sharing powerful stories about local renewable energy.
I would love to start with kind of a focused question on electric vehicles. You know, like, what is it that makes an electric car better than a comparable gas-powered car? Is it just that electricity is cheaper per mile as a fuel, or, you know, as in the example of Tesla, that it's really fun to drive because it can be so fast, or is it something else?
There are actually many reasons why an electric vehicle is superior to an internal combustion engine or, you know, gasoline car. And when I say car, I mean trucks and buses and so on. And actually, I want to step back a little bit to make a comparison. 10 years ago, when the smartphone came out, it was a more expensive product, but also a superior product. So, you know, the iPhone, the Android, and so on came out at $600. And folks, you know, experts and so on said, who would want to buy a $600 phone when you can buy the $100 Nokia, right? And they did not get it. You know, of course, we know what happened to Nokia. Gone, right?
Right.
The smartphone, what they did not get is that the smartphone is not just a phone. I mean, calling, making a phone call is one of the many, many things that we can do with a smartphone. And that's why people bought phones, and that's why smartphone disrupted the cell phone business. That's what I call a disruption from above. So you start out with a superior product that's also more expensive, but the technologies in that product go down in cost really, really quickly, and they end up being even cheaper than the existing mainstream product, and that's what the electric vehicle is. So when you ask me, you know, why is the EV better? Well, it is superior for many reasons. I mean, one is the electric motor lasts 1,000,000 miles versus 150 or 200,000 miles for the internal combustion engine. And, you know, it's 10 times cheaper to charge on a per mile basis. The electric motor is more powerful than, you know, you can soon buy a $35,000 EV with a, you know, performance of a Porsche, which essentially you could not do before.
I can't wait for the minivan to come out.
It will come out over the next couple of years. And then, you know, the electric drivetrain has only 20 moving parts versus about 2,000 moving parts for the gasoline car. So essentially maintenance for the EV is essentially free. So, I mean, there are many, many reasons. I mean, the experts get it wrong when they say, oh, gasoline is cheaper and therefore that's going to affect, you know, the EV market and so on. That's like folks saying, you know, 15 years ago that the Kodak film was going to get cheaper and therefore digital cameras were not going to disrupt it, right? So at some point, gasoline cost is going to be irrelevant in this disruption. Now, on top of all of these things, you can power your house with your electric vehicle. If you take a Bolt, a GM Bolt, or a Tesla, basically a 200-mile range electric vehicle, you can power the average American home, which consumes about 30 kilowatt hours per day, can be powered for two whole days with your electric vehicle. Try that with your gasoline car, right? It just cannot do it. It's just not possible. And you could do the opposite too. You can power your electric vehicle with your house. So whether you get that electricity from the grid or from your solar, you can power your car with your house. So you cannot possibly do that with gasoline cars. So when you start putting all of these things together, there are many, many, many reasons why the electric vehicle is disruptive, why it's so superior to your standard gasoline automobile or a truck or whatever.
So, you know, I think it's really helpful for people to understand the breadth of this, but then also, as you mentioned, the way that the technology is going to get cheaper. So in your book that you published in 2014, Clean Disruption, you know, the subtitle said, and I just want to read the whole thing for listeners here, Silicon Valley will make oil, nuclear, natural gas, coal, electric utilities, and conventional cars obsolete by 2030. But what caught my attention was your presentation last year, in which you really seemed to say that the timeline is moving up and very quickly. Just focusing on electric cars, since that's where we started, what is making them competitive so quickly?
So the main driver of the main cost item in an electric vehicle is the battery. And I mean, the technology itself has been around for decades, but batteries were very expensive and were not portable and so on. Lithium-ion batteries changed everything. And specifically, the cost of lithium-ion batteries from about 95 to about 2010 went down by about 14% per year. And so, you know, this is a technology cost curve that happens in many technologies. So Moore's Law in computing essentially says that the cost of computing goes down by about 41% per year. And that's why we get cheaper, better computers every time. And that has been happening for decades. So back to the battery. Batteries improved from 95 to 2010 by about 14% per year. And then from about 2010 to 2014, it actually accelerated to about 16% per year. And if you take from 2010 to 2016, it's actually been 20% per year. So the technology cost curve of batteries has actually been accelerating, meaning that the cost per kilowatt hour has been going down on an exponential basis by about 20% per year. Why does it accelerate? Because there are economies of scale and there are learning curves in manufacturing batteries. So when Tesla started building its gigafactory, essentially they doubled world production of lithium-ion batteries. And what that did was as you manufacture more, you learn more about it, you gain economies of scale, you can get cheaper prices. And so Tesla has driven the cost curve of lithium-ion batteries to accelerate. And of course, others have built up even bigger factories, BYD and Samsung SDI, Panasonic. Panasonic works with Tesla and LG and so on and so forth, which means that the whole industry now is on an even accelerated cost curve for batteries. And that's a long winded way to say that the cost of battery is getting cheaper, faster, better, safer, essentially by the month, by the year. And this is making EVs cheaper than even I anticipated 3 years ago when Clean Disruption came out. So this is what is accelerating the cost of EVs. And this is why a Tesla will be able to profitably put out this Tesla Model 3, which is going to be essentially a $35,000 Porsche. And neither Porsche nor Buick will be able to compete for this.
Hey, thanks for listening to Local Energy Rules. If you've made it this far, you're obviously a fan, and we could use your help for just 2 minutes. Wherever you found our podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, or somewhere else, help other folks find us too by rating our podcast. You should also check out ILSR's other podcasts like Building Local Power or Community Broadband Bits. Thanks so much for listening.
So let's switch to talk about solar energy for a minute. You have a remarkable slide in your presentation about the falling costs of solar relative to fossil fuels like oil and coal. Do you feel like solar, like batteries, continue to get cheaper?
Yeah, and actually solar has gone down from about $100 per watt in 1970 to about 33 cents a watt right now. That means that solar photovoltaics have improved by about 300 times in cost since 1970. And this is amazing, but not surprising because, again, like batteries, solar has a learning curve of 22%, which means that every time the installed base of solar doubles, the cost of solar panels goes down by about 22%. At the same time, every single form of energy source, coal, oil, nukes, natural gas, has gone up since 70 by anywhere from 6 to 16 times. And when you put these two numbers together, it means that unsubsidized solar has improved the economics by about 1,800 times relative to coal and by about 5,000 times relative to oil and by about 4,000 times relative to nukes. So the fact that PV is a technology and we know how to drive technology cost curves down means that, yes, it's going to keep going down in cost for the foreseeable future. I mean, there's no limit per se that we see. And in fact, solar is so cheap right now that the installed cost of solar is about three times or maybe more times more expensive than the solar panel itself, which is amazing. I mean, the solar panel itself is only a minor part of the total installed cost of solar. Right now, the cost of capital, meaning interest rate, adds more to the cost of solar electricity than solar panels themselves. The cost of permitting basically is higher than the cost of solar PV. The cost of installation is more expensive than the cost of solar PV itself. So as we take all of these other costs down also, solar is going to get very, very, very cheap. And, you know, some folks are talking about free electrons, essentially that the cost of a solar rooftop, when you install it, when you either build your house or when you have to change the rooftop anyway after 10 or 20 years, the cost of a solar rooftop is going to be the same or even cheaper than the cost of an asphalt roof. And at that point, essentially, you have free solar or even negative cost solar. And that day is not too far away. When you look at solar in the desert, you know, large-scale, utility-scale solar today, unsubsidized solar is the cheapest form of energy generation already. In Chile, it's 2.5 cents per kilowatt hour, and that's less than half of the cost of coal today, and that's unsubsidized solar. In Abu Dhabi, solar is at 2.9 cents per kilowatt hour, and again, that is less than half of the cost of coal, it's less than half of the cost of natural gas, and so on. Solar is not the future. Solar is today, and solar is only going to get cheaper. It doesn't make any financial sense in the desert to install anything except solar today.
So we're talking about disruptions in two different markets, both transportation with electric vehicles, and you talk even further about the way that technology will change vehicles, but also in energy. But it seems that these disruptions are related, and I'm curious, what technologies do you see in common that are driving both disruptions?
Yeah, so what's going to happen is that, you know, we have two parallel infrastructures today. We have the electricity infrastructure, and we have the basically the oil, the gas pipelines, and so on. And, you know, the electricity infrastructure powers our houses and factories and so on. And then you have the automotive infrastructure, where you have pipelines and so on. That is converging. Everything will be electrified. All transportation will be electrified. So those two industries are merging, and they're going to become one. There's going to be no difference between the infrastructure of vehicles and the infrastructure of electricity. So what is driving that? It's a combination of things. Batteries, of course, is one of the essential technologies that underlie both electric mobility and also solar and wind. So that is driving and enabling both, and that's a virtuous cycle. The more solar you have with storage, the more demand you get for batteries, and the cheaper they get, which means that electric vehicles get even cheaper, which means that solar and storage get cheaper and so on and so forth. That's one thing. And the others that a lot of folks don't talk about is your classic Silicon Valley technologies, I mean sensors. Sensors are getting cheaper, which means that you can essentially in artificial intelligence, computing, and so on, so that you can manage, you by you, I mean anyone, any home, any business, anybody with a battery at home will be able to have software, traditional software, that will be able to manage the home, electricity consumption, will be able to manage when you can import electricity from the grid, when you're able to export to the grid, depending on the prices, depending on whatever you want. So a lot of the things driving this disruption are classic Silicon Valley software, artificial intelligence, computing, sensors, and so on and so forth.
Speaking of technology disruption, you mentioned also in your presentation, I think this is a theme that we're hearing a lot in this whole conversation around energy, is, you know, the landline smartphone debacle, and that AT&T, the incumbent monopoly, missed a huge $1 billion opportunity with the disruption of mobile phones. Are automakers in a similar danger, or electric utilities for that matter?
Yes, they all are. Essentially, the point to make here is that disruptions happen from the outside. So usually incumbents either don't see the disruption coming, or they don't see it coming quickly. They deny it, so it's too late for them to do anything about it. So the same thing is happening with car makers and also with electric utilities. So if you take car makers, they for a long time denied that for them EVs were toys, that they could never disrupt a 100-year-old industry and so on and so forth. But only now are many of them getting around to the fact that this disruption is happening and it's in your face. But they are in danger of being disrupted, most of them. Tesla and other electric vehicle companies essentially disrupt this market because they essentially have nothing to lose. The incumbents have all the cash flow coming from, you know, the aftermarket, for instance, from maintenance, the business model that they have built over the last 100 years. That's what they have to lose. So they don't see it coming, but they're also addicted to that cash flow that's going to disappear. And in terms of utilities, same thing. Utilities have been monopolies for a long time. They have owned the generation and the transmission and the distribution and the retail and so on. They have been able to maintain their very, very, very inefficient economic system because they are rewarded by the capital expenditure. The more money that they invest, even in inefficient generation, even in wasteful generation, the more that they are rewarded by the Public Utility Commission. So they have had no incentive to make electricity cheaper, less wasteful. When you get new companies coming in from the outside, the solar cities and the solar companies and battery companies and so on, who have nothing to lose and everything to gain and who are competitive with each other, essentially the monopolies have no chance. So the same thing that happened with the AT&T monopoly, which was first broken up and then essentially they missed out on the cell phone disruption, is happening with most of the utilities, not just in the U.S., but around the world. And the way that most of them are dealing with this disruption is to go back to politicians. So to impose taxes on solar, to impose demand charges on businesses and so on, rather than remake themselves to be able to be competitive in this new world of distributed energy resources.
I think I hear implicit in that comment that you think this will be unsuccessful. I mean, we've seen a lot of utilities throw their political muscle around in Florida, in Nevada, in Arizona, and in some cases they've been successful, but you don't see that being successful in the long run?
No, not even in the medium run. So what's going to happen is that when the cost of solar and when the cost of solar plus storage without subsidy becomes cheaper than what the utilities basically are offering us, and this is called grid parity. by the industry, and we're beyond grid parity. I mean, today solar is cheaper than what utilities sell to us in hundreds of markets around the world. And that's why solar is accelerating, because millions of consumers are making the economically rational choice, which is to go with solar. But at some point, over the next few years, in pretty much every market around the world, by about 2020, essentially solar plus storage is going to become cheaper than the cost of transmission. So this is what I call grid parity. So when solar plus storage on your rooftop, on your home, on your business, becomes cheaper than the cost of transmission, that means that even if the utility generates at a cost of zero, which is not possible, in their central generation station, no matter what that is, coal, nukes, you name it, essentially when you add the cost of transmission, it'll always be cheaper to generate solar and store it in your home than whatever the utility can price their electricity at. At that point, essentially, solar and storage become a consumer item, meaning that millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of consumers are going to go out to IKEA, to Walmart, and so on, and buy solar because it makes rational economic sense for them to do that. And essentially, they will not need permission from the utility. They will not need permission from the government. They're going to have to back out. Essentially, when you have, when this is the rational economic choice for hundreds of millions of consumers. And by the way, this is already happening in markets like Australia. In Australia, solar is already cheaper than the cost of transmission. And this is partly why you have, you know, in residential markets, you have a penetration, solar penetration of about 25%. 25% of homes in Australia have solar today, right? It's much cheaper than the cost of even transmission. The utilities in Australia cannot compete with installed residential solar. And that's happening in the U.S. That's starting to happen pretty much in every market. So, what are utilities going to do? They're going to push back as much as possible. They're going to, you know, push the public utility commissions, and they're going to push the federal government and so on. But in the end, all this is for naught, because consumers, like they did with cell phones, they're going to make the rational economic choice, which is going to be to go with solar plus storage.
This poses one additional question for me, though, which is, is the end game here the same as for the phone market, where we really are talking about cord cutting? I'm just thinking about, you know, people in multifamily housing, or people who can't put solar on their roof because they don't own their property, or even just people whose roofs are not large enough to provide for solar to provide their entire household demand. You know, what happens there?
Yeah, it's not going to be cord cutting. I think, you know, the concept of the section from the grid has been overblown in many ways. I mean, many people will get off the grid. But like you said, most people don't own their roof. Most people, even those who do, will not be able to generate enough power basically for the whole year, even if they can store it and so on and so forth. So what we're looking at is more like an internet of energy, where everybody, whether it's yourself or the parking lot or the Walmart or the supermarket, or basically it's going to be more community-based, so that everybody will be able to generate and store and manage and sell to their neighbors and sell to the business down the street and so on. So it's going to become more of a two-way kind of thing, just like the internet is a two-way thing. You can upload and we can download electricity, if you will. Most of us are not going to get off the grid. Distribution, you know, the local distribution will become actually more important, not less, when we have very cheap electricity, because our electricity consumption is going to go up. Anything that goes basically down in cost, and, you know, at some point it may be almost free, if not totally free, essentially consumption is going to go up. So the value of the distribution, of the community distribution, is going to be higher. So we're going to share electricity with neighbors, with basically our communities. And community could be small, could be larger, and so on. But most of us are not going to be set from the grid.
So just one final question, and I realize it requires a little bit of context around in your presentation. You also talk about the technology underpinning self-driving cars. So my son will be turning 8 in April. Is he ever going to need a driver's license?
No. Assuming that so he's 8, it's 2017. Is he going to need a driver's license 2027? No. He will see human drivers as, you know, we see cassette tapes or we see records or horses or whatever. I mean, it's a thing of the past. In 10 years, essentially all new vehicles will be self-driving. And so your son will never, you know, need a driver's license. He may need a driver's license for identity reasons, but not to drive. He won't need to drive.
As a parent, I have to say that's a very comforting thought. Thank you so much for joining me to talk about all of these wonderful things, to share about your research and your findings in clean disruption. Just really appreciate the time talking with you.
John, it's my pleasure. Anytime.
That was author Tony Seba speaking with John Farrell, director of the Energy Democracy Initiative here at ILSR, about how massive growth in the clean energy market is fueling a radical transformation of the transportation and electricity sectors. For more information on Seba's work, including his book, Clean Disruption of Energy and Transportation, How Silicon Valley Will Make Oil, Nuclear, Natural Gas, Coal, Electric Utilities, and Conventional Cars Obsolete by 2030, visit Tony Seba, that's TonySeba.com. Head over to ILSR.org for more information on the evolving clean energy economy. And while you're there, check out other episodes of the Local Energy Rules podcast. Until next time, keep your energy local, and thanks for listening.